Hello and welcome to the Know on SOS podcast. SOS is an initiative on the countywide March 2020 ballot. It is being brought forward by a group of extremely wealthy Wall Street investors who paid to put this measure on the countywide ballot this March. The Know on SOS campaign is brought to you by business leaders, sheriff deputies, firefighters, young families, young professionals, family farmers, riverside commuters, politicians on both sides of the political aisle, affordable housing developers, and others. SOS will hurt our economy and make it harder for San Diegans to rent and buy homes. Young families will suffer the most, and it won't protect our rural lands or give us the control it promises. We promise to get into all that and more on these podcast episodes. We hope you find them interesting and informative and give you things to think about ahead of the March 2020 election. For more information on the Know on SOS campaign, please go to www.knowonsos.org. And as always, thank you for listening. All right. So I'm Tony Manilatis. I'm the principal with Manilatis Nelson Murphy Advertising and PR. My firm is the lead consultant on the Know on SOS campaign. We are here today with Gary London. Gary is not affiliated with the campaign in any way other than the fact that he knows a little bit about the measure. And so we want to talk to him about the measure on the March 2020 ballot. But before we get into that, Gary London, real estate analyst, real estate economist. I mean, you wear a lot of hats. So how do we tell listeners succinctly who you are and what you do?
Thanks for having me on, Tony. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I am an economic dirt kicker.
I like that.
Yeah, our clients typically are developers or investors or lenders, oftentimes public agencies. And the questions revolve around the economics of real estate in the market. You know, should I purchase this property? If so, what should I build on it? Or should I invest in it? Is it a good investment? How much money am I going to make? And I do a lot of strategic consulting because I've been around for a while. So, you know, how do I go about it? And what's my overall sort of strategic plan for the property? So we have conducted these kinds of real estate studies. Well, I've had my firm since 1991, and I've been doing this since late 70s. So I've been around a few years in San Diego.
And you're a professor, right? You teach right now real estate. Well, tell us a little bit about that.
So presently I teach at the University of San Diego. I'm a little lazy, so I only teach a couple short classes a year at this point. But the over the years I've taught at UCSD. I taught over 22 years there. I was an adjunct professor at Arizona State for a few years teaching in the master's degree in real estate. And so typically these classes are an extension or they're in the master's degree programs. And I've lectured lots of places, and at San Diego State, I've done classes and lectures as well.
And we get to read your little piece of your commentary every week in the Union Tribune. You're a member of the San Diego Union Tribune's Econometer. That's a fun sort of engagement tool that the UT uses with economists to talk about issues in the public interest. Something in your bio caught my attention, and I was wondering if you could just real quickly give us the story. It says here, you were featured on CBS Evening News' Eye on America for his commentary on the real estate market. That's a pretty big deal. So how did that happen? What was that about?
It was a long time ago, and it's such a big deal that I've kept it on my resume, even though it was, you know, well over 20 years ago.
Good for you.
But that was the time in the 90s when the federal government was closing down savings and loans and taking over land portfolios. So we conducted a major study on the impact of all of that on San Diego and Southern California real estate. That created a white paper which caught the attention of the appropriate congressional subcommittee. They held hearings, and they asked me to testify at the hearings. So from there...
You testified before Congress.
Yes, I did.
Back when Congress actually listened to people. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, I have no illusions they listened to me, but it was great for my resume.
Well, there are a lot... it just seems like, boy, Congress is such a bad rap these days, and some of it obviously is well deserved. But
well, I was young and I was a believer back then.
Yeah.
But the CBS Evening News picked it up, and we did a walk and talk. I remember this was a lot of fun up at UTC, and we talked about what was going on in the real estate and land use world. And
that's cool.
That was a lot of fun for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that story with us. So we kind of travel in the same circles, you and I, but we've never sat down for too long. We've met a handful of times. We most recently met a couple weeks ago at Shepherd Mullin, the law firm downtown, where the No on SOS campaign, myself and several other team members were there to present. Here's the survey results we've done on this measure. Here's our campaign plan. And now, can you write us a check and help us fund this campaign? So it was a pretty A to Z briefing. You happened to be there. You apparently liked what you heard because we've talked a couple times since then. Why are you interested in this measure?
So I was interested in it because I hadn't known a lot about what the details of the upcoming election was going to be. But I think going back, I've been involved in San Diego land use issues since the late 70s, actually since the mid 70s. And I've seen a lot of growth and anti-growth initiatives and housing initiatives back and forth come and go. But they all sort of happened where the atmospheric conditions were such that, you know, we're fighting over this issue of who are we going to be when we grow up as a region. But today it's different. We've already sort of grown up as a region. And the issue in front of us, this, you know, non-SOS issue, really goes to the heart of whether or not our economic survival is in question. And it takes it to a whole another level that I've never seen before on land use issues. Before, it was just about, should we allow housing in this location or not? How many people should we allow here? Should we stop growth if we can or should we not?
But it was more project specific.
Project specific, and it was, you know, a situation where if developers can't do it here, they can do it there. There are always angles and ways to sort of deal with whatever came up. This time around, we're in a point in time where we don't have a lot of options. And that's what has really raised my concern with respect to this particular initiative. And there's a lot of things that bother me about it. But the most important thing is that if we really go forward and pass an initiative that literally wipes out all housing development of even a small size, much less larger projects, from the unincorporated areas of San Diego County, all we really have left is vertical development in existing urban communities. The problem with that is that we can't build as many of those units. We can't build the right kind of units to accommodate all market segments, particularly young families. And we are ultimately going to put us in a position as a region of jeopardizing our economy, of jeopardizing companies that need to add workers here. And we've seen this play out in other regions. And so I guess the reason I'm interested in is I want to sort of be part of an effort to make people aware that this has consequences beyond just stopping development in my backyard. This has consequences which go to the very heart of what kind of an economic region we can sustain. And ultimately, it's going to impact our pocketbooks, our schools, right, our environment, just about every issue, every box you can check goes to the heart of this issue.
You said a lot of good things. A couple things I want to circle back on. One is the... the infill development. You mentioned it's hard to build all that supply. If it was easy, we'd be seeing it, and we're not seeing it, or certainly not seeing it at the levels we need it. Is it because it costs a lot of money to build those steel and concrete structures, or is it because there's just not a huge market for it? Because a lot of young families prefer, you know, a place with grass and a yard. Why aren't we seeing all this infill that you know, a lot of the younger people and some of the environmentalists are. I mean, we all want to see more infill. We're just not seeing it.
Well, there's a lot of versions of answers to that question. Let me try to go through the list as comprehensively as I can. The main thing that I'm speaking to there is, in the old days, we had land to build on. When we needed to accommodate the 20 to 40,000 people that we add every year in San Diego region, we did then, and we're adding pretty much the same numbers now. How we grow is different, but we're still growing the same numbers. The way we did it was we grew out. We grew up the I-5 corridor, up the I-15 corridor, and down to the south. Today, we can no longer grow out, except in the unincorporated areas, which is pretty much the heart of this topic here. So all we can do now is grow up.
And let's remind folks, the unincorporated areas, Bonita to the south, North County, up and down that I-15 growth and transit corridor, that's primarily what we're talking about. We're not talking about building in Julian or Ramona. Okay. Sorry, no, I didn't want to interrupt.
Not only are we not talking about there, but most people don't want to live in those places.
Correct.
They're too far from where they were,
right,
which is a big issue that I have with the current county plan. You know, they sort of encourage villages,
right,
and I'm not sure that's the right encouragement. But that's the point there is that we ought to be encouraging development along the major freeway corridors. That's, to me, pretty logical. And we're not. This initiative sort of goes against that. The idea of only building vertically, growing up versus growing out, is restrictive on its face because we simply can't build enough of those kinds of units to accommodate the, in my opinion, 15,000 housing units we need to build every year. We just can't get there. And the proof is in the numbers. We haven't ever gotten there. We did maybe 9,000 last year, 8,000 the year before. We might get to 6,000 this year. We're just not anywhere close. That's a problem. The other problem is
it because of the cost? They just cost a lot.
Well, they cost a lot, but they only serve a limited segment,
right,
of the marketplace. They're really only,
right,
serving young people or old people, not the big middle of, you know, that really demands housing that isn't getting it, which is families.
Right.
So that's a big problem. Plus, the other real issue is sort of a practical one. You can only build these projects in increments of 20 units or 200 units or 500 units are the big ones. You can't build them in increments of 1,000 units or 2,000 units or even 500 units, which is typically what you would see in sort of in horizontal master plan communities.
For young families.
Yeah, for young families. So that's just the practical, just the numbers themselves is a problem. The other sort of the disconnect, what in market research we call segmentation, which is that we're only serving, as I said a moment ago, young people and old people, and not serving families. So families are the ones who are taking, the heads of the households of these families are the ones who need to be employed to raise,
right,
their families.
Right.
And those are the ones that we're stripping of the potential to buy or even rent housing. Because those people are typically, with some exceptions, but typically not going to live in vertical high-rises in downtown or in UTC or in any other community. Those are the people that we are basically extracting from the housing delivery system if we pass initiatives like No on SOS.
And we already are, is it to some degree, right? I mean, these people that we're talking about are moving to Riverside or just giving up entirely on Southern California.
Yeah, we're behind the eight ball on that for,
right,
sure. Now, there were a bunch of projects that were approved by the county last year, which are sort of stuck in litigation, CEQA things,
right,
and all that. But even that doesn't sort of, you know, take a big enough bite out of the apple. So the result is that we might have the sort of political boundary between the San Diego region or the San Diego County and, say, Riverside County. But, you know, the only people that respect that are politicians. Clean air doesn't respect that.
Right.
Deers don't respect that. And people don't. So what they do is the heads of households move their families up the I-15 corridor in particular, and to some extent other places, and they commute every day to get to their jobs in San Diego County.
Yeah, they moved to Riverside County. More than 13,000 in 2016 alone moved to Riverside. More than 13,000 San Diegans in 1 year moved to Riverside County. and they commute, like you say, back here to work.
Yeah, and if you don't believe me, just take a drive.
No, I believe you.
7 in the morning south or 5
yeah,
in the afternoon.
It's brutal.
North. I mean,
right.
It's really.
And they're on the road up to 4 hours a day.
It's brutal and it's ridiculous because what they're doing is they're burning carbon.
Right.
They're decreasing their quality of life by not seeing their kids
right.
because they're traveling too far. The stress associated with the people doing that is high, and the stress associated with the companies that hire them is particularly high. We did a survey as part of a big regional study that we performed twice, the most recent of which was last year on behalf of the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce, in which part of what we're trying to do is look at this linkage between economics and housing. And one of the overarching survey questions revolved around sort of I'll just paraphrase it. We asked company managers and owners, so what keeps you up at night? And the answer 100% universally was some version of, we can't find or retain or keep happy our employees, you know, because of issues relating to housing and quality of life and the cost of living, which sort of is all encompassed in those things. And the answer to that ultimately is obvious, which is that then these companies don't expand in San Diego, or they move out of San Diego,
right.
or they never grow in San Diego. And ultimately, if you play that out further, and it doesn't have to be in the far future, it could be over this next decade, these companies essentially don't do business in San Diego. And this magnificent regional economic machine that we've created in this region basically goes away. And if you want to look for examples of that, go up to Ventura County, go up to Santa Barbara County, which are you know, near LA and near that giant economic engine, and they basically either created boutique economies for the very wealthy, or they've dried up economically, and the numbers are there. And I fear that's what our future is in San Diego. And the problem is it doesn't have to be.
Right.
You know, we can accommodate a good chunk of this growth if we just open up obvious places for real estate development.
Right.
We're not talking about invading the unincorporated rural areas here.
Yeah, I have a copy of the study that you mentioned that you did with the Regional Chamber of Commerce. Here's how the Union Tribune covered it. First paragraph in the journalism business, we called this the lead. It says, nearly half of San Diego County's largest working group are considering leaving in the next 2 years, said a report released Thursday. 44% of the region's working millennials said they're considering leaving, with the primary reason being high housing costs. Said a new survey. So this talks about the folks on the receiving end, and what you're saying is it's worse than that, because we talked to employers and they said that the number one thing that keeps them up at night is the recruitment and retention issues that they're facing with their employees, and a lot of that has to do with the high cost of housing. I mean, I talked to Mark Cafferty at the EDC, and he says just about every time he runs into a executive with Illumina or some of these other firms, they're always banging on Mark, he says, because recruitment and retention, and saying and giving them real world examples like, look, I've got a young scientists that are making $100,000 a year doing amazing work, and I'm losing them. They're moving to North Carolina where they can get a house near the beach, or they can rent an apartment where they don't have to double up, you know, and live in some cramped apartment. So that's essentially what you're saying is this housing crisis is driving it's wreaking such havoc on our economy, and this measure, this no growth measure, would just exacerbate that problem.
Yeah, this is a slippery slope. I mean, if this kind of initiative passes, not only are we going to see a plugging up of real estate development opportunities, which are otherwise obvious in unincorporated parts of the county, but we're going to see it sort of replicate in the municipalities around San Diego amongst NIMBYs and no-growthers and so forth.
Yeah, talk to me about that. That's what happened in Ventura County,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I mean, people are easily persuaded.
This idea that the proponents say two things. They say that SOS would protect our backcountry, and we know that's not correct, because 95% of the backcountry is protected now until, you know, perpetuity.
Or owned by the federal or state.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
And they inserted all of these loopholes and exemptions. The only thing they're trying to block here is homes for working families. You can still, under this measure, you can still build casinos and resorts and hotels. None of that is included in the measure, all exempted. So there's that argument about the backcountry. Then the other thing they say is that this will if this measure is passed, that will lead to more infill development. Well, we saw in Ventura County, and talk to us about this, that's not the case, because what we'll see is if this measure passes in at the county level in March, then what we'll see is copycat measures in the cities that'll just shut down all growth everywhere, more or less.
Well, I think that's exactly what the political outcome of all this will be. But even today, the problem is even more basic than that, Tony. Apartments don't accommodate families. I mean, I'm in the infill business. A lot of my clients are building residentially dominated mixed-use projects in one density or another. That's almost all we work on. But we're dealing with a very narrow market segment. We're not dealing with the scientist or the young manager of a firm that makes a good living and is raising a young family whose only option now really is to, if they can't find a fixer-upper somewhere, you know, in the existing suburbs, is to move out of San Diego or move far away.
A $600,000 fixer-upper, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Well, and what happens is there's a disconnect between where most of these companies that we surveyed are, which is North County. That's where I think about 70% of the new jobs are created, from the I-52 corridor north.
Right.
And where people can live, which is either South County or Temecula or somewhere like that. Most of the housing that we see as infill has frankly been in downtown San Diego and some other select places like UTC.
Right.
And, you know, that's a unidimensional marketing target, you know,
right,
basically for either people that are pre-family development or
right,
you know, pre-children or post. And that's a problem. And I think that right now the atmospheric conditions are such that, you know, the city of San Diego has been pretty good about, you know, loosening up for at least transit-oriented development,
right,
infill and that sort of thing. But those political climates can change, particularly if there's momentum in this initiative passes. Then I think we're going to see these copycats other places. And it's all a big lie because
it,
people
right,
suffer from sort of this delusion that this is going to somehow increase their quality of life when in fact it's going to decrease it.
And I mean, have you studied Ventura County? I've done some research on the Ventura County measures, and you know, I read a study that Dr. Reeser at Point Loma Nazarene did, and where she made the point and showed what happened was, you know, there was a measure just like SOS that passed in the city of Ventura. Then there was all these copycat measures. This was in the 90s. Within 5 years, everybody had all these no growth measures on the books, and it really crushed the economy and job growth and really stymied, you know, housing affordability, and it's never, the county's never really recovered from that.
Yeah, and I expect that is a scenario that at some level will ultimately play out in San Diego. And what's such a shame.
We can avoid that.
Well, we can avoid it by voting down this initiative, but also we're just at that point in the sort of the economic sophistication of our region where we're starting to see high technology companies really express an interest in coming to San Diego. And I have worked on over just this last year on two projects specifically that would accommodate over 1 million square feet of, you know, technology office space outside of downtown. And the ability to fill that space with companies is in trouble.
Right.
Because these companies are looking at our housing situation. And they like San Diego's housing prices, say, relative to Silicon Valley.
Right.
But you still have to have the homes, and we don't have them. So that's a big problem.
And the rent's high, too, here, right? I mean, and a measure like this would make rents higher?
Sure, because if you can't buy a house, you're going to want to rent a house. And if you have more demand than you have supply, rent levels get bid up. And the recent rent control initiative that passed at the state legislative level exacerbates that problem further because people are already ginning up their rent levels just to be able to max out their rents, right, in lieu of limits that they're going to face in the future. So we got lots of sort of major affordability issues on our table right now that we need to really take a deep breath and think about more carefully than what this particular initiative allows us to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, like you say, if we're not building homes, rents are going to increase. If we're not building homes, that impacts negatively affordable housing. I mean, everybody loses here.
Yeah, and I think that if someone who disagrees with me were listening to this, they would say, well, you know, listen, families ought to live differently. You know, maybe they shouldn't have single family homes. And they may be a little bit right. So maybe what we should be doing is putting a little bit more density in the suburbs, doing cluster housing and townhomes and row homes and that sort of thing.
Right.
Maybe we don't want to Manhattanize San Diego, but we certainly can do be more efficient with our land. I buy into all of that. Yeah. But what we can't do is take the land out of the equation, and that's what this initiative does.
Good point. I mean, I'm on the same page. I mean, I'm, I guess, what they would call a YIMBY, right? I mean, I think all housing is needed and important, critical. And doing anything that would further restrict the supply in the middle of this deepening housing crisis seems counterintuitive.
Well, it does. The numbers have never been worse, Tony. I mean, you know, as yeah. I said earlier, we're not even delivering half the supply. We're so behind in terms of the housing needs right now. You know, I think it's easy to project, even at this moment, that we're behind the eight ball by perhaps 150,000 housing units right now, and the projections are ominous. I mean, even if the cities say on paper that they're going to accommodate housing, the process of development is so complicated that we just can't get there. And this kind of an initiative, this particular initiative, makes it that much more onerous.
Representative Weiner tweeted, Scott Weiner, who's a big, yeah, big housing champion, tweeted recently, in the early 60s, California's population was 15 million, and we built 250 to 300,000 homes per year. Today, our population is 40 million, and we build 80,000 homes a year. So our population nearly tripled, while our housing production dropped by over two-thirds. And people wonder why housing is so expensive. He went on to say, some argue that only homes that should be built are for subsidized below market rate homes, aka affordable housing, and no market rate homes should be built. This argument is, in effect, he says, an argument for a housing shortage. That's why so many no growthers have adopted this argument. Agree? Disagree?
Well, I agree, and I don't even know how to respond to that other than put an exclamation mark on it. I mean, he has summarized the issue exactly right. And what he's also said, by the way, is it's not just San Diego. I mean, it's a
California
state issue. It's really a coastal issue, and all over up and down the West Coast. And we have to legislators. And from, you know, from state legislators down to city council people are not getting the message that they need to do more to bolster private sector delivery of housing. They need to do more to get out of the way and to compress the time frame. What they don't need to be doing is creating more burden on developers and their customers, buyers of housing, renters of housing, by putting in place more affordable housing units and so forth, because that just bids up prices further for market rate. They're going in sort of the wrong direction. But the basic point is we're just not building enough housing units, right, because it's complicated right now to do it, or we don't have the land to do it.
So want to wrap this up, but before we do, I want to hear, you know, is there anything we haven't covered that we should? Let's quickly take a dive into the general plan and the general plan amendments. The proponents of SOS, by the way, SOS is the so-called Save Our San Diego Countryside. In December, it'll be Measure A or Measure B, but we won't know that until the county issues the letter in December. Again, the election is this March. So the county has this general plan, like all government agencies do. And, you know, the argument is by the proponents that, you know, it took years and they spent millions of dollars and we should adhere to the general plan. There's units in the general plan that allow for development. Well, when you peel that onion back and you look at those units, here's what you find. The only density at all is in villages, far away places like Ramona and Alpine, where nobody wants to build because nobody wants to. You know,
it's too far from jobs
and freeways and right and schools.
Basic
and,
infrastructure isn't there.
Exactly. So what's left? The unincorporated area, Bonita to the south, and North County near the I-15. All of that in the general plan is essentially on 2, 3, 4 acre lots. You know, McMansions, which don't do anything for the young families and the working families that and the young professionals that we're losing. So, what say you about this general? So anyways, there's a process where you can go through to get a general plan amendment if you're a developer, and the general plan amendment allows you to upzone that property to build the type of product, the condos, the townhomes, that working families, young professionals, nurses, nurses, teachers, police officers, firefighters can afford to purchase. So what do you make of this general plan argument?
So I'm a planner by training. That's what my master's degree in. So I don't have qualifications for lots of things, but this is one that I am qualified to talk.
Yeah,
about.
And so let's I don't want to interrupt you, but so what the measure?
Anyway,
what, I'm sorry, right? Yeah, but what the measure would do, just for the listeners, what the measure would do is essentially block all general plan amendments.
Yeah.
If you wanted a general plan amendment for six or more homes. You would have to go to a vote of the 1.6 million people, present your project to them, which is just ludicrous and would cost taxpayers a whole bunch of money to vote on something that the Board of Supervisors, and there's no runaway growth. You're only allowed to pass 4 general plan amendments a year. Anyways, I'm sorry. I talked too much.
No, you don't have to apologize to me. Maybe to your listeners.
Yeah.
A big part of this problem is this sort of philosophical idea that a plan is in place, you adhere to it, like it's the Magna Carta, like it's stuck in stone. Whereas in planning
school, the Holy Grail.
Yeah, like in planning school or, you know, or just almost in every other part of legislation, it's sort of moving and evolving, or again, you change with the times. So if something doesn't work, you change it. If economic circumstances or market needs change, you look at it. And that's really sort of a bogus argument that we can't change the plan. Moreover, I'm not sure the plan was right in the first place. I mean, just because we have these old villages in the county, and just because they spent all these millions of dollars saying those are the place to emphasize growth, that doesn't make it logical. A basic part of market research in terms of discovering demand for housing, is what is the relationship between where people live and where people work? That should be the test.
Right.
And if that's the test,
right,
then the answer to your question is we need to loosen up or allow the opportunity along the I-15 corridor,
yeah,
up and down it, for housing to be built, because that's not rural.
Right.
That's just the places where the cars are going by anyway.
Right.
And those are the places that ought to open up. And guess what? If we did that, those are the places that are closest to the big job centers in San Diego. And that's my argument, is that we're not really talking about backcountry. We're not talking about if housing doesn't get built there, it's going to get built in Julian. It's not, for the reasons that we just said.
Most of the jobs, you're saying, are in North
most
County.
Most of the jobs are, and really we're talking about sort of this triangle between I-15 and I-5 from basically I-52 up to the border, up to Pendleton. Those are the parts that the demand for housing is the greatest. Those are the parts where we have land available for development. And that's the part where the plan ought to be changed. And the Board of Supervisors, by the way, recognize that. They approved projects last year which allow it housing to be built. It hasn't been built yet because all of these initiatives and legal stuff.
As soon as the board approves them, right, the Sierra Club sues.
Yeah, it's just the beginning. That's
right.
Not the end.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. So I think that's one thing. The other thing that I want to make sure I get in before we're done is that we really need to change the conversation, Tony, from it being a developer versus the people issue to a broader economic and business conversation. Businesses need to get involved in this issue, I think, with their pocketbooks and also with their interests, because circling right back to the front end of our conversation, it's about their employees, mm-hmm. and it's about their own sustenance. And that's why the Chamber asked me to look at this a couple of times over the past few years, so that we can make sure that we draw the connection between where people work and where people live, and that there is an economic aspect to this, probably the biggest aspect to this housing issue, and it ought not to be just the responsibility of developers.
Oh, I agree. And a lot of the developers are becoming ambivalent or just giving up and taking their investment dollars and building in Arizona and Nevada. And
well, I can tell you this much. Our clientele has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
I mean, I cut my teeth on working with housing developers in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and those people are gone, those companies are gone. Most of my clients now are smaller, urban type developers, and that's fine.
Right.
And they're great people and great clients, but we've sort of given up on this idea of developing housing for families,
yeah.
because it is so complicated.
So I'll read one thing again. This is from the county's impact report of the SOS measure. So the county staff did what they call an impact report of the measure, and it's pretty good reading, but there's one part in particular I really like. It says, and I quote, "The county's general plan, as well as other general plans throughout the state, are updated or amended periodically to help ensure that the document remains relevant. State planning law addresses general plan amendments, stating, if it deems to be in the public interest, the legislative body may amend all or part of an adopted general plan. The State of California Office of Planning and Research provides additional context, stating, quote, planning is a continuous process. That's the point you just made, Gary. As such, the general plan should be reviewed regularly, regardless of its horizon, and revised as new information becomes available and as community needs and values change." So, pretty good stuff there about the general plan. So what didn't we cover, Gary, that we should before we sign off?
Well, I think a couple of things it's, I think, important to get in. One is the whole environmental aspect of this. The fact that if it plays out the way it's sort of playing out now, where we just need people to fill jobs in this county, and we need economic sustenance and growth for our economy and our region to run right, we have to draw from people who are living elsewhere who choose to live outside of the county. When they're doing that, they're driving their cars. And when they're driving their cars, except if they own a Tesla, they're burning carbon. And so we're exasperating the environmental issues. And I want to make it very clear that we're not solving an environmental problem here. We're causing an environmental problem. I think that's a major part of this message. I'm not an environmentalist, I'm an economist, but that's a major message that thinks that to me is intuitively obvious.
The number one cause of greenhouse gases, correct, is auto emissions.
Auto emissions.
Right.
And so we're creating more auto trips, and you know, there may be a day where all cars are electrical, or we create big trains.
I'm from Detroit, and so I'm not praying for that day. Detroit's upping its game on the electric game. But boy, nothing like a V8 from Detroit, though.
So you actually have evolved into my last point, which is that you're from Detroit.
Yes.
And you know what the difference between Detroit and San Diego is? Besides
the ocean. Oh, we have Great Lakes though in Michigan. They're quite beautiful.
You do, but here's the deal. Yeah. Detroit is a place where people are leaving.
Correct.
San Diego is a place where people are coming to. Okay? If you want to destroy an economy, look to places like Detroit or other places along the Rust Belt. And that's a bleak future. Well, we're going to get at that bleak future a different way if we don't accommodate the growth of development here. And I don't mean to sound like an alarmist, but the way this plays out is that if your answer to all this is we don't need to grow our economy, we don't need to keep our economy relevant, then you need to go to places like Detroit and see what those burnt out neighborhoods look like. And you get a sense of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's a good point. for those that don't know, I mean, Detroit was a city built for 2.2 million people. It was known as the Paris of the Midwest in its heyday. Had 8-lane boulevards all over, not just in one or two places, and never diversified its economy. Just lived and then ultimately died through the auto industry. What you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is we need to continue to grow and fuel our economy. If we don't, we will end up someday like the city of Detroit, which is now home to about 750,000 residents. No more is it the home of 2.2 million people.
Right, and the beauty of San Diego is that we're a diversified economy that's working on, to use the auto metaphor, all 8 cylinders.
Right.
We're really doing well.
Right.
So I know it's hard for people to listen to this and sort of leap to the Detroit conclusion, but I think you have to understand economically that we're in a good place right now, and we're right at the cusp of starting to, you know, tear out the layers of our economy that we struggled so hard to create. Diversification, different jobs, different incomes, and so forth. The only missing piece of the puzzle that we're missing
is housing.
And it's so easy to solve if we can just get out of our own way. And these initiatives are just so wrong in terms of creating any solution. And by the way, there is one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that this initiative is being financed by people who don't have any stake in San Diego, other than giving massages to rich people at the Golden Door.
Well,
And I think that people need to be aware that the money that's supporting this, for the large part, are people that don't really have a stake in our region, other than a very sort of narrow, selfish business stake. That's how this thing all started, and we need to create that awareness.
There are a handful of what we call it, extremely wealthy Wall Street investors that paid good money, a lot of it, to gather signatures and put this measure on the ballot. And I suspect that they will also be spending money to encourage voters to support it. But right, other than them and some of our environmentalist friends who think infill is the only answer to our housing crisis, there really is no constituency for this measure.
There won't be if people really understand what we're talking about in this conversation today. That when you strip away the argument for yes, you really should be realizing that you're going to be causing a big problem in this region economically,
right,
and in terms of our quality of life and our ability to keep our own children and grandchildren in this community. And I think that's just patently unfair.
Yeah, I mean, look at I live in Del Cerro, and that neighborhood is predominantly two types of folks. Grandmas and grandpas who raised the family there and now live alone, and younger families with kids. It's got good schools. And those grandma and grandpas, some of them, I've noticed, they're losing their families. Their families are moving to Arizona and Utah and Chicago, and they're leaving because of the rent prices, because they can't afford a $600,000 starter home, and that's not who we want to be in San Diego, right?
And this is the norm. This is not what you've described, is not the exception. I mean, people my age, baby boomers,
right,
who are now, you know, with the exception of me, you know, raising, you know, seeing their grandchildren move away, and are seeing their kids move away to raise their grandchildren. And we've had a higher out-migration in San Diego than in-migration. Our growth is owed to natural increase, more people being born here than dying. Our growth is no longer owed to people coming in. More people are leaving, and they're leaving for exactly the reasons that you articulate. So this is not an esoteric thing. This is what's going on right now that ultimately is going to be a problem. If we're not able to keep the people that are born here and raised here and schooled here to stay here to work and to thrive
and to have a family, a lot of young kids in San Diego are putting off having children because they already can't afford the rent, you know.
Right. They're the ones that are, I guess, stuck in downtown living there. Not stuck, it's a good place to live, but I mean, my point is that people evolve in their lifespan.
Right.
I mean,
right.
If you can't move out of your apartment and get married and raise kids in this county, then a lot of these jobs and skills that these people have, these young people have, are transferable to other places. And that's the very dynamics that we've actually seen play out sort of under the radar over the past decade. And that's what we really want to prevent here.
Well, thanks, Gary. You are a font of knowledge, and really enjoyed talking to you. And I'm glad that you decided to come on and talk about SOS and the impacts it would have on the economy and just the fabric of San Diego. Really appreciate you spending some time with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ad paid for by Planning Today for San Diego's Future, a coalition of housing advocates, Save Our Rural Economy, Building Industry Association of San Diego County, farmers, taxpayers, firefighters, and law enforcement. Committee major funding from Building Industry Association of San Diego County. FPPC ID number 1417521.